So it's my honor to introduce our speaker today. We like to say that as a community, we want a diversity of voices because we all experience God differently and see the world a little differently. And so it's been my honor, actually, to get to know Marlon the last couple of days. I feel like we've been kind of on a little bit of a journey, which has been really beautiful. I don't know if you've had the experience where you kind of start to get to know someone and you're intrigued, like, oh, man, this is someone I want to get to know more. And then the more we hung out, I was like, oh, man, I felt this deepening sense of admiration and respect. And his daughter, Phoenix, who he's going to introduce in a minute, has also been, and I don't want to embarrass you too much, but it's been really beautiful just to see, there I am. I can't see y'all anymore, but I know you're there somewhere. Okay, you're coming back. It's been really, just really beautiful to see just the compassion, the protection, the mutual love of their relationship. And so anyway, I hope today we can kind of open our hearts. We've, as a community, tried to kind of lean into some harder conversations, and we're not asking Marlon to carry that for us, but to support some of that. But also knowing that Marlon's a beautiful person, and he's done a lot of work, and that beauty is really evident. So I pray we could just be really open-hearted to the way God would kind of speak through him today. So can y'all give him a warm welcome as he comes to share with us? Yeah. And Phoenix, yeah.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here and so blessed. My wonderful daughter, Phoenix, messed with my phone right before I got up here. And in a magnificent way, she's been a disruptive innovation in my life. And disruptive innovation is a context in which no innovation happens without a disruption to the way things are. And life as I knew it was limited in its imagination. And in many ways, Phoenix, life as I knew it before you came along didn't have quite as much beauty. And Phoenix, would you come here right quick? This is my Fifi. Say, hey, Fifi. Hey. I said, say, hey, Fifi. Hey, Fifi. This ain't Donald Trump. This is Phoenix Hall, y'all. Those of you who support Donald Trump, God bless you, too. But Fifi, I just want to I want to acknowledge you. I know that Daddy travels a lot, and I'm so grateful that you're patient with me as I share good news with great people. And I love you very much. Okay, baby? I love you very much. Okay, I go to church. Go have fun. My name is Marlon, and Phoenix is my daughter, and she's taught me most of the things in the past 7 years that I've needed to know for the rest of my life. One of the things that she taught me is about listening. And I thought I was teaching her how to listen, but really she teaches me how to listen. I became a yoga teacher a year ago. And in that journey of becoming a yoga teacher, I went to Panama for 21 days for a 21-day immersion. And so I hadn't seen Phoenix in 21 days. I had not been away from her for longer than like 5 days at a time. And so this was traumatic for me. So on the 22nd day, I sat down with her. We had lunch. We played. We had fun. And it was almost time for bedtime. And I decided that at 6:30, her bedtime is 7:30. Her bedtime is what, y'all? 7:30. Thank you. We're going to play a little ping pong, homiletics. It's going to be some ping pong. So I'm going to hit you a homiletical ball. You hit it right back. Y'all mind hitting balls back? Good. Let's play, right? Her bedtime was at what time? 7:30. And it was 6:30, y'all. I sat down with her face to face, knee to knee. My chin leaned into her chin. And we talked. And some of the things that she shared with me, I had never heard her say. And in the ways that she shared them, I had never heard anyone share them. And so after the 60 minutes in my mind of us talking right before bedtime, I took a glance at my watch. And do you guys know that it wasn't 60 minutes that had passed, but it was hours? In fact, it was 10:30.
Yeah.
And I just leaned in and I touched her on her left knee and I said, Fifi, I said, Daddy is so proud of you and how you've grown in the past 21 days. I said, I love the way that you speak and the way that you think. And she looked at me like this. She was like, I was like, what, dude? She's like, well, actually, Dad. And she leaned in and touched me on my left knee. She said, I always talk like this. She said, you just never listen. She said, so Daddy, thank you for growing in the past 21 days. You are a better listener. Then she said, good night. It's past my bedtime. And she left me there melting. And so as we begin our journey today, let us rise from the ashes of my burned expectations of my own capacity to teach my daughter. And I want to ask you a question as we begin. That question is, name what you are listening for in one word. Because guess what? You get whatever you want. Even when what you want is to get a bad message, you get that too. Did you know that? We get what we want. So let's begin with a unique desire that leans us into what we want. So turn and talk to a neighbor and share with them, in a word, one thing you're listening for today. Thank you. Like literally, turn and talk. All right. So now tell me, what did you hear your partner say? Just scream it out. Proof? Oh, my God, you won't find it. He said, truth, understanding. You'll find it. If you want it, you'll find it today. Correction? Direction. Lord have mercy, you won't find correction today. But direction you may find. Thank you so much. Yes. Hope. Yeah. Empathy. Beautiful. Uh-huh. Peace. Yes, yes, peace, peace. What's that? Connection. What a gratitude. What beautiful things you guys are listening for. I invite you to lean into that. But before you lean into that, sit up straight in your chairs. Elevate the crown of your head up towards the ceiling as if a string is drawing it up directly towards the ceiling. Now look at your feet. Now you may want to scooch your toes forward or scooch your heels back. Make sure that your knees are in alignment with your ankles, right? Now lift and spread your toes inside your shoes. Literally lift and spread your toes. Do you feel the knuckles of your feet, y'all? I said, do you feel the knuckles of your feet? Yes. Root down into the knuckles of your feet. Inhale in through your nose. Exhale out through your mouth. Inhale in through your nose. Elevate the crown of your head up even more. Out through your mouth. Now lion's breath. Inhale in through your nose. Throw that tongue outside out. Today, I would like to invite you into a flow, and the flow is going to move in a way that is, it's interactive. And so it won't just be me talking, it'll be you listening and you sharing at the same time. The flow is going to move from my intentions into some experiences that inform my intentions, into some imaginations I'd like to share with you, into a listening lab where you will be listening to each other's and we'll be listening to the entire room. Y'all cool with that?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Here are my intentions. My mama, she taught for 30 years and went on to teach teachers for 10. And she often says, Marlon, when sharing a new idea, I did not say this. Jason and I dressed the exact same this morning.
Yeah, so we symbiotically became the same person, different body. I'm his Danny DeVito.
My mama said, Marlon, when sharing a new idea with a new community, first state your intentions, then communicate the intentions, right, through experiences. What experiences inform those intentions? And I'm from the South, and I always say, yes, ma'am. My first intention is to antagonize the hell out of the comfort that limits cultural creativity. Hell is mediocrity. Hell is doubt. Hell is middle-of-the-road thinking. Hell is lukewarm living. Hell is the kind of way that we move in the middle of the road and we wonder why we always get sideswiped as a society. It's because we have not chosen to find heaven on earth as it is in heaven, right? So the second is to instigate a riot of the heart that burns for beauty and loots for love. Let's read this one together. Ready? Read.
Instigate a riot of the heart
I want you to walk out of here just tearing these chairs all the way up, tearing these little lights down, just kicking poles out of the way. I want you to be on fire with the passion to do something new, not just in this community, but in the world, because God can use this community as an influence for the transformation and the evolution of humanity. Did you know that?
I did.
And lastly, I'm doing this for the first time. This is so cool. Your team is so ill. They're teaching me so much. I'm using my cell phone as a remote. So live. Lastly, ready, read. To unearth the power of risks inherent to human. I am an anthropologist. That's my primary work. And as an anthropologist, I've been observing some of the mess and the manure of our culture, both morally, also politically, socioeconomically. And I've learned that in the midst of this transformation that we are experiencing, that it is time for us to take risks. I think that we have been risk averse because we've been taught that by taking the risk to state what we really believe, we get criminalized, right? You share something online and then trolls come running to tear you down. And so we are afraid to take risks with what we really believe. But I believe that it is risky to be safe. And safer to be risky in this time of human evolution, in this time of transformation. Anyone? Experiences. The experiences I want to share with you are rooted in my experience as a pastor. I became a pastor after my pilgrimage of being an anthropologist. And to be honest with you, when I received my call to ministry, it wasn't pretty. I wasn't excited. I wanted to be a cultural anthropologist who traveled the world to unearth beauty from brokenness. But then God called me to the church, and I wondered why God had called an anthropologist to lead a congregation. And then I recognized that Jesus was the very first cultural anthropologist. Cultural anthropologists use something called participant observation, where they not only observe the culture like sociologists. Are there any sociologists in the room? Good. Not like sociologists who just sit in air-conditioned spaces with a list of questions and a list of people to call and just ask them questions. We go to where the people are. Just joking. I love sociologists. We go to where the people are. We connect with who the people are. We learn the languages. We eat the food. We dance the dances. We learn the inside jokes, right? And so as an anthropologist, I used anthropology to navigate the culture of our community. I've since been called away from my church as a pastor to be a full-time anthropologist for the sake of human development. But that's what I did. That's one of my experiences. We founded a human development corporation. Some people called it a nonprofit. And that is in 2005. And that Human Development Corporation founded a restaurant. We recognize that in our neighborhood, before we do any project in our church, we do an anthropological study for 6 months in our neighborhood to put our finger on the pulse of exactly what it is the people need so that we don't architect buildings or programs on top of existing communities that don't need those programs or buildings. Amen, somebody, right? Rather than that, what we do is we become spiritual archaeologists to unearth God where he already is working in our community and just partner with those people to do that. So we started a restaurant that were culinary artists in our community who had like amazing ideas, who had recently graduated from culinary arts school, but did not have the overhead for their own restaurant. So we allowed our church to consume itself. We cannibalize our church over and over again to become these new things. And so we ate our church as it was so that it could give fuel to this restaurant. And as a result of this restaurant, seven of the culinary artists that we were featured, all seven of them launched their restaurants and their products. Anybody familiar with Kickin' Kombucha? Yes. Kickin' Kombucha was incubated out of our restaurant, yeah. And there are several restaurants in the city of Houston that were hatched out of this commitment, this risky commitment that we made to unearth human potential. And then I'm a curator of human potential. Recently, my wife and I reimagined our relationship. Some people call that divorce. And in the midst of that divorce, I felt lonely and lost. And so I turned a reclaimed wood table, a table made of reclaimed wood from my great grandmother's house, into a space where I would invite people from all over the city who did not share a vocation and did not share a socioeconomic connection, but did share a heart for our city, 16 people at a time. And at this table, people come around and they talk about who they are, not what they do.
And, this is an example of one of the salon, we call them salon dinner parties, right? And then I'm an ancient futurist. I'm a lecturing fellow at Duke Divinity. And so you may be asking, what is an ancient futurist? I take artists from Houston, Texas to Nairobi, artist educators and social engineers. And at one point we went and we were doing it for about 7 years and it was super successful. And we came upon this dude named Jimmy Oganga. Jimmy was supposed to be one of the most celebrated curators in Nairobi. And everybody said, if you connect with anyone, you got to connect with Jimmy. And so we made plans to connect with him. And when I first met him, he lit a cigarette. And in the words of my great grandmother, he lit the cigarette from the rooter to the tooter. And he blew all of the smoke in my face. And I said, well, will you join our social imagination project? And he said, no. He said, unfortunately, we cannot imagine what Africa can become because we have forgotten who Africa was. He says, we've been educated toward Europe and away from Africa, and it is essential for us to remember our future. There are things from the past that we have forgotten that we need to move us into the future. So we trashed our social imagination project, the project that we thought we were offering Nairobi and that Nairobi was offering us, so that we can join their amnesia therapy project. When I got back to Houston, I recognized that Nairobians aren't the only people who have amnesia. Houstonians, and particularly those who follow Jesus, have amnesia. The church has suffered from tremendous amnesia. We have forgotten why we exist, and so it's been really difficult for us to imagine what's next for us. When you forget your why, your what is cloudy. Well, what's the why of the church? Thanks for asking. Y'all ask good questions. There's a bird, it's called the Sankofa bird. It's a symbol of the African understanding of how to progress into the future. And it's a bird that moves forward with its breasts moving forward, but with its beak moving back, either dropping or picking up a seed from the past. And so the past uniquely informs the future. And so what are some of the things that are inherent to the church's why? Well, great question. Thanks for asking. Number one is a risk. The church has always been risky. The church has always put its body where its call is and not where its fear or fall is, right? And so what does that look like? Well, it looks like it's time for us to recognize that if we are to do anything that moves us into a new imagination for what the church must do, I didn't mean to point at you directly. I was pointing generally in this direction. I think that you look like a risky kind of dude. God bless you, right? Right. And that's a compliment, yes. It is essential for us to recognize that we have to be riskier than we are safe. And I look at this room and it's such a beautiful room of wonderful people. But boy, this room really ain't risky when it comes to cross-pollination. I got to tell you. Oh, it's so safe in here, y'all. I see so many like-minded people. But the kingdom was not that way. You see, the kingdom moved dynamically. And this is not condemnation. I'm not kind. Now, y'all like, man, well, Gideon brought somebody up in here to just chastise us. No, I love you. And I'm inviting you into a space where you take more risks with who you invite, how, and why. Not just into this space, but into your life, right? Risky. Not just that, but some may say, is that biblical? I heard it. I heard it by the Spirit. I heard somebody say, but what the Bible got to say about that? Thank you for asking. John 3:16 says that, for God so loved the world that he gave not one of three, but his only begotten son. You know, that was risky, right? To give your only? You better not ever ask me to give Phoenix up for nothing. I'm not giving Phoenix up for nothing in this world or any world beyond it. Yet God gave his only begotten son. We have to give up life as we know it to gain the life that God is calling us into. And then beauty. Oh, one of the things that's inherent to the church that we've forgotten is not just risks, but also this concept that beauty rises from the ashes of brokenness, right? Ugly and unhappy endings can lead to purely beautiful beginnings. Oh, there's an urban poet, an American poet whose name is J. Cole. And he says this. He says, you know, oh, y'all know that poet? Oh, cool. He says this. He says, often we don't do happy endings, but we do pure beginnings. Now, the ending to the way things were may be unhappy.
an ending to the silos that we create where we don't cross-pollinate with other people who are different from us may seem unhappy because we like being with people who are like us and like us alone. It makes us comfortable, right? Howsoever, that needs to come to an unhappy ending. But don't fret. Unhappy endings are the prelude to pure beginnings. That's a principle. Another principle is, I thought I was so technologically fancy. Creativity. Creativity has been a beautiful golden thread woven into the fabric of what blankets the kingdom. What allows the church to be what it is in the world and the way that the church brings together this mosaic of different expressions of hope has been rooted in creativity. But here's the thing about creativity. Creativity and comfort sometimes don't play very well. Comfort can be the enemy of creativity. Wherever you are most comfortable in your life, you have less room for creativity in the world, right? And so when it comes to understanding creativity, we have to know that sometimes our capacity to create is directly proportionate to our willingness to embrace discomfort. Did you hear what I said? Yes or no? Your capacity in life, in love, in evocation or vocation, your capacity to create is directly proportionate to your willingness to go into spaces that make you uncomfortable, including hearing Jason's doppelganger tell us that we're not diverse, which is what I am telling you. And I love you. I love you guys so much. And I don't even know you. Well, why, Marlon? Thanks for asking. Because comfort isn't that comfortable anyway. Naya Valentine, a person who's a part of our community, when we were experimenting with how we would cross-pollinate, we don't call it diversity because I believe diversity is an end. And once you get a whole bunch of different kinds of people in a room, we think that we've done our work. But it's not just about being diverse, it's about being authentic. And authenticity brings us to this place to where we cross-pollinate to grow something new. And cross-pollination comes directly as a result of dealing with our love for comfort. Far too many of us have blankets that we carry around like that Peanuts character. What was his name? Linus? Yeah, we have that Linus syndrome, don't we? And we like to blanket our lives with only the people that look, think, and talk like us. But comfort isn't that comfortable. Is that biblical? Thank you for asking. Yes, it is. Genesis 1 through 3. Check it out. In the beginning, let's read this together. Ready? Read. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was formless, empty, dark. And God was hovering over the ecotone of his creation. Oh, this beginning began as a mess, y'all. It was so uncomfortable. Can you imagine how the earth felt? The earth was probably like, dang, ain't you God? Can't you just make me perfect? Why I gotta start off formless? Why I gotta start off empty? Why I gotta start off dark? I think God was setting how he created the genesis of the earth up as a beautiful and powerful poetic metaphor for how we will create Genesis over and over again, not just as the church, but as humanity. So some may ask, well, what is an ecotone? Anybody ever heard of an ecotone? Really? Is there one? Not one? Yes! Look underneath your seat. You just won a new car. No, you didn't. What do you do, though, when you're in the midst of Genesis? And the fact that you guys have invited me here to have a conversation, y'all like, I didn't invite you. The fact that your leadership invited me here as an anthropologist and as a person called by Christ to explore the possibility of how to create something new through the cross-pollination of diversity, right, is because I think that you guys are in the messy middle of it. And I think that you're not alone. We all are. I think all you have to do is turn on the news and recognize that there's a tension growing in between who we were and who we're becoming as a nation, as a humanity, as a world. And I celebrate the fact that you guys invite me here to be a catalyst, right? Well, what is an ecotone? An ecotone is where we are culturally. And an ecotone is a beautiful metaphor for how all things grow, how all things create Genesis, even in the midst of discomfort. An ecotone is an ecosystem in between two ecosystems, two neighboring ecosystems. So there's the land ecosystem, like right there. Then there's the transitional ecosystem. That's the ecotone. Then there's like the aquatic system. Anybody ever went swimming in a pond before? Yeah, you run down the grassy knoll, you're like, yay, woo, going swimming. And then you get to the messy, muddy middle part, and you're like, ew, 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 ew. And then you jump into the pond, psh, yay, right? We like the yay, the grassy knoll. We like the psh, yay. We love those, the bread of the sandwich of transformation. But sometimes it's hard for us to chew through the meat. You understand what I'm saying? Yes or no? Okay, good. It's that in-between space that gets in between the toes of our traditional mindsets. It's that messy, muddy middle space that we try our best to leap over, but all we do is find our heels at the very edge of the ecotone, and we slip and fall straight on our butts into the mess anyway. So why not find ways to navigate through the ecotone? Ecotone through the messy, muddy middle space that we are in as a civilization. And I think that for so long we've been taught that comfort is the destiny of the average American, that the American dream, if it's realized, is when we have all of the comforts that life has to offer us. But do you know that that concept of the American way that leads us into comfort also pulls us away from human evolution? As organisms, we were not designed to resist comfort, but to move through comfort, because the way out of discomfort is through it, not under it, not around it. If we are to evolve as a human civilization, as an organism, we must find ways to flourish even in the midst of the messy, muddy middle, which is where we find ourselves in. And so I say that to say this, man, we are in a beautiful blessing of a space in our time in human history. Never in human history have we had the technological advances, the rate of information that travels the way that it does, to make it so that we can be human better than we've been human in any other time in our lives. Yet, oftentimes, many of us find that we don't feel right in our own bodies. That's because we have been resisting growth by avoiding the messy, muddy, middle spaces and conversations. But nature, like the very beginning itself, Genesis, gives us a beautiful instructional guide. And I know that homilies are not designed to give instruction, but to give edification. And they told me that this was supposed to be a homily. And I was like, dang, I start off with an intention that says I want to antagonize the hell out of you. That's not very much of a homily. I'm sorry. God bless you. I'm inviting you to recognize that the ecotone, even though it's messy and even though it's muddy, did you guys know what the ecotone has to offer? Ecotone, eco, life, tonos, tension. Aren't we in a tension in civilization right now? We're in the midst of something that can grow us. And did you know this about the ecotone? Did you know that the ecotone has three principles that we can lean into and learn from? Did you know that the ecotone is where organisms are biodiverse? The organisms that live in the ecotone can live in the water and in the grass. They're diverse. Not just that, but organisms that find themselves not avoiding the messy, muddy middle spaces of conversations that we need to have about how to progress as a civilization, they also find that the soil is fertile. Did you know that the soil was super duper rich in the midst of the ecotone? You can grow almost anything in the midst of the ecotone. And not just that, but in the ecotone integration. The ecotone integrates two neighboring eco communities that would not be neighbored had it not been for the messy, muddy middle spaces. We are finding ourselves in the midst of a beautiful and fertile space. And God wants to use the crap of our present problems to fertilize our future. But it's our responsibility to process the crap so that the crap just ain't crap, so that it could be fertilizing. You know the difference, right? You just got cow boo-boo out there. You're just like, yeah, that's gonna help. There are things to do to not allow the crap to remain, but to cultivate transformation. Transformation that makes it so that we don't remain who we were, but we're pulled into who we're becoming. Well, after all that screaming and all that talking, is that biblical? I always do this. Is that biblical? Because in audiences, sometimes when I talk about like the ecotone and I talk about evolution, people be like, yeah, but what about that Bible though? Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. Let's read this together. Ready? Read. I just stop right there. Do this a press. To move into the call, the higher call of Christ, right? As a church, as a kingdom, as a person, as a family, we have to press. Without friction, there is no movement. Without the friction up against the asphalt and the rubber of the tire, the car ain't going nowhere. We have to deal with the sparks that resonate from the friction that leads us faithfully into the future. And if we are unwilling to deal with tension, we are then not allowing ourselves to open up to the possibility that tenacity can lead us into beauty, into bounty, into God's grace. Have you ever experimented with that, Marlon? Like, are you just up here just talking about all this stuff? Yes, I have. We started this thing called Folklore Films. And Folklore Films, after our restaurant ended its course, we have a beginning, a middle, and an end to all of our projects. We then did a new anthropological study. And our anthropological study recognized that in the city of Houston, people told the worst stories to themselves about themselves. So we decided to do this anthropological, this visual anthropological film series, telling better stories to the city about the city, one folkloric person at a time. And so Folklore Films was born out of that. And Folklore Films was a beautiful way for us to give voice to how we wanted to cross-pollinate people who shared a city but may not share an ethnic background. And so we brought people together from all different lives and all different neighborhoods, and we told their stories. And the way that we screened our films in pairs. So we would screen a film featuring one person who was from one particular community and another person who was from a different one. And then we would screen those pairs together. So in a room like this, half of the folk would be here for one person from one community, and the other half of the folk would be here for another person from a different community. And in the midst of the conversations that they had through the films, these two separate communities became one community. These two separate histories became one history. These two separate lives became one life in the midst of our work. And a couple of the things that we learned in that work is that there is a difference between diversity and authenticity. The number one thing we learned from the ecotone is that the ecotone is an authentic space where organisms are biodiverse. Now, I think I was working with an energy company that will remain nameless, and they invited me to come in as an anthropologist to do an anthropological study to ask the question, are we as diverse as we could be? And before I even accepted the opportunity, I said, well, is diversity your goal? They said, yeah, we want our office to look like a collage made up of many different kinds of people. I was like, that's a good look. It's a good look. I was like, but why? And they said, well, because we want to be on the cutting edge of our industry, and we believe that that image will allow us to be there. And I said, oh, the image. I was like, well, does the image communicate authenticity? You see, diversity, being a room that's diverse, is not just about having different kinds of people to look at in the room. It's about creating something that feels more authentically like the world, something that feels more authentically like the organisms that we are. If you look at most environments, ecological environments that flourish, those ecological environments that flourish are the ones that have different kinds of species that do life together. And they cross-pollinate in how they help each other grow. So the role of diversity is not just to look different, but to be different, to be more authentic. Diversity is a means to the end of authenticity. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to turn to the person next to you, and I want you to ask them, do you value authenticity? Do you value authenticity? And then when they say yes or no, say why or why not. Turn now. All right, all right, all right. All right. Somebody, say what you heard. Say what you heard. Okay, did anybody hear a no? I'm just joking. Okay, yes. Anybody want to talk about the why behind the yes that they heard? Not your own, but the one you heard. To cut through the facade. What is the facade? Those damn should be's and need to be's. They are damned. That's not a curse word. It's in the Bible. Amen. They are damned. What else? Nothing is perfect because nothing is perfect. Because nothing is perfect. Because, in fact, beauty involves imperfection in one way or another. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. One more. What's that? It builds. It wasn't your thing. Yes. Person who said that builds trust. Can you talk about that? Okay, don't worry about it. You can if you want to. She said, I don't know. I just feel like I'm translating for you. I don't know. I just feel like there's a connection. God, I love how you make a beautiful connection between trust and connection. Like, they're synonymous in many ways. They work together. Once you gain trust, you find authentic connection. What's your name? Susie? Thank you so much, Susie. I appreciate you. That was powerful. Yeah, okay. So now you know whether or not you do or don't value authenticity, right? I really don't give a damn. Excuse me. I really don't give a blessing about about diversity. Like, don't invite me to the table. And that's what I told Gideon. I ain't gonna lie to y'all. Gideon asked me 2 years ago if I would come and share a homily, and I was like, yeah. You know, once I find out what that is, I'll be definitely so happy to share. I'm just joking. I've never been asked to do a homily, so. I do know what one is, okay? I just found out. We Googled it, Phoenix and I, in the back. I said yes to Gideon. I did not say yes to a conversation about diversity. Because I'm sick of them. As an African-American male, I live the challenge that is a theoretical problem in our nation. So it's theory for others, it's practice for me. And so why do I want to talk about what I have to endure on a daily basis when I get to do a homily for the first time? Why my first homily got to be about something I hate? You said what, bro? How you going to throw my stuff back on me? That's not right. That's not trust building. I do not feel connected to you. What's your name, man? What's your name? Mike. Thank you so much, Mike. You're awesome.
Note to self. Tell Gideon to watch out for Mike. I'm just joking. Yeah, okay. Thank you, Lord.
I want to invite you now to consider the third practice, or the third lesson that we can learn from the ecological system called an ecotone in the midst of this transformation that we're experiencing, right? And that is integration, right? The integration of two different communities. Bruv, my thing messed up. Would you hit enter? Thank you so much.
You're so awesome. I hate to make you my manual remote. You're a blessing. Thank you so much. And your baby is so beautiful.
Why don't we integrate communities more? Why don't we integrate communities more? Turn and talk to a neighbor. All right. So, lift and spread your toes and your shoes. Elevate the crown of your head up. Inhale in through your nose. Sigh it out through your mouth. Extend your left fingertips all the way to the left. Extend your right fingertips all the way to the right. Turn and face that neighbor you just talked to and bring your fingertips together behind their backs. See that? See how that worked? Y'all didn't know hugging was yogic. Namaste. That's just for you. Come on, hit me with it. What is it?
Why don't we? Systemic racism. That's a what? A systemic racism is a what? Why? Fear. Fear of discomfort, change. Comfort. Resistance. What do we resist and why? Change, different. Growth. That's why you had to cup it. That boy said, loss of control. I know this is right. Loss of control. This is perfect thing to say out loud. Cup my hands so that people can hear it. And as you should, that's beautiful, man. Thanks for sharing that. What's your name, bruv? Oh, you stole it and cupped it. That's the American way, I tell you what, baby. Yeah, you crowd colonist, you. I love you. You're so kind. I'm just joking, y'all. I'm just jokes. It's just jokes. It's jokes. Yeah. Lastly, the ecotone. I saved number two for last because it's my favorite. The ecotone is essential because it's fertile. We've been thinking that the deaths that we see, the assassination of black males, black male bodies not being valued as human, as fatal. And it has been. It has been. And those of us who are alive, and those of us who are in this room right now under the sound of my voice, and those listening via whatever viral advocacy goes out on the internet, I don't know how it goes out. Those of you who are listening, whoever can hear this, you are responsible to not just see it as fatal, but also to see it as fertile. We are in the midst of a beautiful transformation as organisms, my friend. And it is messy. It's muddy. But it's also a beautiful prelude to what could be magnificent and what could truly change what it means to be human. So often we believe that the end to which we have these conversations about dealing with what's uncomfortable about the inequity socially and culturally between women and men, between white privilege and every other non-privilege, between people who are from a community that represents folks who love differently. We experience that as a problem, but what if this is not just a problem, but a unique opportunity, a proponent to human evolution? And what if thousands of years from now, if we do what we're supposed to do, generations will look upon this moment as a significant, beautiful change? Full of bounty and transformation. We think of America and our understanding of culture as an old institution, but the American institution is small in its capacity based on the virtue of the entire human development. This is just one moment in human development, my friends. We're so narcissistic that we think that this is all of humanity right now. Yeah, this is the best. You know, let's make humanity great again. Yuck. That was whack. Can you edit that out? That shit was whack. Whack, urban English vernacular for inappropriate. The soil is fertile, my friends, but you won't know how the seed of your life can grow something new if you don't get in the mud. It's time for every last one of you to get into the mud of the messy yet magnificent transformation that is before not just this church, not just this city, not just this nation, but all of human possibility can hinge on whether or not we take advantage of this moment. It's not just a time for us to settle with diversity and saying we want different people in the room. What if you pursuing a person who's different from you could be the very catalyst that transforms how we see humanity? It's not just a black, white, queer, non-queer thing. It's a human opportunity to grow what it means to be human. Sorry for screaming at you. I love you so much.
Do you see the messiness of our human development as fertile? Why? Oh, why not? Turn and talk. Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. Somebody has a question. Yes. And she's with child, too, so listen closely.
Yes, so we've been having difficult conversations with our families about what's going on politically and in the world, and we've kind of come to this conclusion that we're going to handle them with grace, and by meaning handle them with grace, it's to not touch them, because it's too hard, because they're, you know, we're just living on a different, it feels like we're almost living on a different planet, and, you know, that's, it's not the way that we want. But unless we want all this discourse, right, in this uncomfortable space in family, it's like, how do you handle that? How do you, you can do it with grace, but you don't have to 100% always be yourself. I'm just have a really hard time with this. And yeah. I want to.
Yeah, your question is, how do you honor your family's desire for peace, to move with grace through difficult possibility? Because you want to honor your family culture. Certainly the parts that are beautiful, like grace. Like a grace? It's, yeah. You have to give what you can't keep to gain what you can't lose. We can't keep acting like resistance is graceful. We have to be honest. So if it's going to be truly graceful, it needs to be truthful first. I think for me, the best metaphor for grace is a ballerina. Right, the way ballerinas are ballerinos, right? Don't you call? Is that right? Oh, excuse me, ballet dancers. You must be, yes, ballet dancers. Don't discredit us. Who said, did you say that, my friend? Oh, man, you look graceful. I'd love to see your toes. Have you ever seen the toes of a ballerina? Do they look graceful? Huh? You see, the very things that move us gracefully have to take a hit. So if your family wants to truly have the grace of a ballerina, when they take the shoes off of their family culture, there needs to be some remnants of hard work there. So is it really grace? Or is it that dude at the club who dances alone super high? He looks really good to himself, but everybody's looking at him like, that dude cannot dance. He's like... He's like, I'm super graceful right now. No, you're not. Take your shoes off. Those toes don't have the reflection of discipline that leads to the destiny of grace. Discipline is a footstep, one heel to the ball of the foot that leads us into grace. I think sometimes, y'all, we get discipline and freedom jacked up. And we think that we want to be free to have the lives that we want to have. But don't you know that discipline and freedom are synonymous in many ways? And so you are just as free to be graceful only as you are disciplined to deal with the hard parts. We've gotten freedom and liberty confused. You can take the liberty to eat as much fried chicken as you want, but you will not have the freedom to wear the bathing suit you want to wear on the beach. I mean, you may be able to. You may be able to pull it off. Some people can. So I invite you, as you think about honest grace with your family, is to know that you have to have the discipline of dealing with the difficult in order to find the freedom to be graceful. Yeah. So turn. I want you to get this. I want turn and talk. And then those of you who don't normally come to lunch after church and you have questions, this is your invitation to come. Let's catalyze some conversation. So turn to your neighbor and ask them, do you see messiness of our time and human development as fertile? Why or why not? Turn and talk to your neighbor. Turn and talk. Just right quick. All right. 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 My friend here, before responding to the question, do you see the messiness of our human development as fertile? Why or why not? He said, well, first we have to learn the history of the mess. He said, many of us don't even see the mess fully because our privilege excludes us from the mess of the mess. We have the best. Many of us only deal with the best of the mess. Whereas most of us who are in the mess deal with the worst of it. Anybody want to share? Is this a fertile possibility for human development, this mess that we're finding ourselves in. What did you hear your neighbor say? That's so true. That's so true. Yeah, that's so true. And all of those, okay, yeah, because you said, in, I like how you said that. My mother-in-law said this. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. Because if you had said, you said that, I was going to really go hard. But since your mother-in-law said that, I'm going to move with grace. Hey, I'd rather have mosquitoes and transformation with it any day. Let me be in the picnic of God's possibility and have to swat a mosquito every now and then to have my daily bread. Like, there are so few people in our world who have the privilege that other people have, and we are moving so delicately that we aren't moving at all, my friends. Now is the time. Don't you know that to be a Christian is to be a barbarian? You come from a heritage of barbarians who did not allow the borders of mountains to keep them from sharing the message of Jesus. This is a dynamic. We've been domesticating the church's role. We've made the church to be a glorified zoo. You know that, right? Well, all of these domesticated animals come into a space and we sit properly and we want to move in ways that don't ruffle the feathers, right? But really, these domesticated zoos with beautiful zebras and wonderful giraffes were still encaged. When really God has called his people and his people to call the world into the jungle of possibility. It's supposed to be a jungle, my friend. We're not marching. Just get your machete and let's move. Yeah. Anybody else want to talk? This is what I want to do. As I conclude my homily that began with hell being antagonized, and as my doppelganger comes up, Jason, I want to double dog dare you to do something. I double dog dare you to, number one, find a new space to orbit in the next 7 days. Find a person who ain't like you. And don't connect with them at face value so that you could be seen connected with somebody who's different than you. Ask them what their story is and find your story in theirs. That's number one, 7 days. I double dog dare you to evaluate whether or not you are moving toward human evolution in your thinking about the problems that we have in our nation or in our world, or whether or not you are sedentary in human evolution. And do that by journaling and writing down all of the ways in which you have privilege that other people don't. And that's all people. You know, and I know this is weird. You know, people say, you know, like oftentimes I talk about Black privilege. And, you know, some of my brothers and sisters are like, man, I don't like you talking about Black privilege because it's not a fair scale. And I'm always like, you're right, because the privilege that I have of being Black, and what's beautiful about being Black, is so far more rich than being anything else in my book. It's just unfair. Being Black is so live, y'all. Being Black is so magnificently wonderful. And I want you to know that it's your privilege sometimes that keeps what's beautiful about being Black from making our nation bountiful. So evaluate where your areas of privilege, all people, no matter what your ethnicity, may be limiting our capacity to grow in humanity. And then lastly, I want you to find someone within your workspace that you make a commitment to not just hear their story, but make a commitment to see a friendship with that person as an ecotone. Someone different. A messy, muddy middle space. Now, this is coming from a person who will not do talks about racial inclusion or diversity. I was talking to my homeboy, George Washington III. I love saying your whole name. It's just ill, urban English vernacular for cool. I was talking to George Washington III. He's like, man, so when you work with groups like this, you know, I was like, well, honestly, dude, I really don't by choice work with groups. I don't go to white churches to talk about race because I'm not going to be a dog or a pony to be displayed before people to talk about how horrible it is to be black so that you can feel bad for the moment, but feel good later that you felt bad for the moment, but did nothing later. Like, I almost cussed. Forget that. What I am doing, though, is antagonize the hell out of you, antagonizing the hell out of you. And hell is mediocrity, and hell is doubt, and hell is lukewarm living, and hell is the middle of the road living that our nation has found itself in, and we get sideswiped time after time, and we wonder why. Will you join all of the ecological movement that's progressing towards growth? And move into the messy, muddy, middle spaces of your lives. One decision, one conversation after the next. I bet not come back to this church and see all these just white people. I'm just joking. I'm just joking. This community can look just as it is right now. However, you need to have in your heart more stories that involve more people. I love you. If you have any questions afterwards, holla at your boy. Thank you so much for your time.